Well, Karl Rove had a bad year. And progressives in Wisconsin had a fantastic night on election night when we watched those returns roll in downtown at the convention center at Monona Terrace, and we saw Tammy triumphantly beating back Tommy Thompson, the unbeatable Senate candidate. It was really fun to see her beat Tommy. It was really fun to see her beat the conventional wisdom. It was really fun to hear her proud progressivism at the podium. And what was really fun also was to see her opening for Barack Obama at appearance after appearance in Wisconsin as the race was tight here. And then to see the president begin to adopt some of Tammy's talking points on trade, on justice for workers, on wages. He started taking some of Tammy's lines. And I think that really shows you the power of Wisconsin progressivism in Washington, D.C. Seeing Tammy in the U.S. Senate alongside Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren really gives us hope. And I am so happy to welcome to the stage Tammy Baldwin.
Thank you, Ruth. Thank you all. It is so great to join you here today. And I have been so proud to work alongside so many of you in this room throughout my time in public service. But I have to say that it is with heartfelt thanks that I join you here today as your United States Senator, representing the great state of Wisconsin. And first off, I'd like to ask everyone to join me in thanking Ed Garvey. Thanking Ed Garvey for his leadership in bringing progressives together for fighting Bobfest since 2002. You know, we joined together to pay tribute to Ed's commitment to advancing our progressive values and giving all of us an opportunity each year to renew our commitment to doing the same. So please join me in another round of applause, thanking Ed and Betty for all their hard work over the years. Now, I stand here today first and foremost to thank you all for your friendship, your engagement, and for your commitment to fight for the progressive values that we share and that have defined our state. I also come here today to address the struggles of the middle class and the growing divide between rich and poor. And I will do that. But before I do, I must acknowledge a matter that I know is on your minds, as well as the minds of all Wisconsinites, and that is Syria. In Syria, where a civil war rages on and where too many have lost their lives, including more than 1,400 in a chemical weapons attack just over 2 weeks ago. You know that I have always taken matters of war and peace very seriously, and I've always been a strong advocate of exhausting all other measures before going to war or using our military might. And I am proud of my record. I have served in the United States Congress under three presidents, and so far I have opposed a military action undertaken by each of them. Airstrikes in Kosovo under President Clinton, war in Iraq under the Bush administration, and use of military force in Libya during the Obama administration. I was one of the earliest opponents of the war in Iraq. As Congress considered authorization of the Iraq War, I posed a number of specific questions to President Bush, and he failed to answer them. I strongly opposed that war. Authorizing it was a tragic mistake, and we must never make that mistake again. Now, as we consider acting in response to the use of chemical weapons in Syria, I am again asking tough questions of President Obama. And I am demanding clear and substantiated answers. And I am also gaining important insights from others. I traveled to Turkey earlier this year and met with war refugees on the Syrian border. I participated in classified briefings on Capitol Hill and at the White House. And I've heard the voices of thousands of Wisconsinites. The gravity of the issues before us are so significant, and they deserve a full debate. I support having that debate, and I'll be an active participant in it. President Obama's decision to come to Congress on this issue was the right one. We must demand that of all presidents, not just our current president, to come to Congress to get approval before taking military action against another nation. There is reason why so many scholars and analysts have written that there are no good options in Syria. It's because there are no good options. The use of chemical weapons is a global atrocity and demands a global response. The various treaties and conventions addressing these issues have been ratified by most of the world's nations, and therefore, devising what will be a precedent-setting response to their violation demands that the world's nations engage in this discussion. America must not act alone. We must engage a larger, broader international community on this, and thus far I do not believe that that has happened. Now, this wouldn't be fighting Bob Fest if we didn't take a moment to ask WWBD. What would Bob do? So let me read a brief excerpt from Fighting Bob's floor speech on the eve of his vote on our entry into World War I nearly a century ago. He starts with Mr. President, but he's addressing the President of the Senate, not the President of the United States. And he says, I had supposed until recently that it was the duty of senators and representatives in Congress to vote and act according to their convictions on all public matters that came before them for consideration and decision. Quite another doctrine has recently been pronounced by certain newspapers, which unfortunately seems to have the profound, considerable support elsewhere. And that is the doctrine of, quote, standing back of the president, without inquiring the president whether the president is right or wrong. For myself, I have never subscribed to that doctrine and never shall. I shall support the president in measures he proposes when I believe them to be right. And I shall oppose measures proposed by the president when I believe them to be wrong. The fact of the matter which the president submits for consideration is of the greatest importance is only additional reason why we should be sure we are right and not be swerved from that conviction or intimidating in its expression in any influence of its power whatsoever. He goes on to say, it is important for us to speak and vote our convictions in matters of internal policy, though we may unfortunately be in disagreement with this president. It is infinitely more important for us to speak and vote our convictions when the question is one of war and peace, certain to involve the lives and fortunes of many of our people, and it may be the destiny of all of them and of the civilized world as well. If, unhappily, on such momentous questions, the most patient research and conscientious consideration we could give them leave us in disagreement with the President, I know of no course to take except to oppose, regretfully, but not less firmly, the demands of the executive. Albeit a century ago, Bob always has some good counsel. Now, I want you to know that I have heard your voices. I share your concerns. And this is an issue that deserves deep, deep consideration and thorough review. And I will continue to ask those tough questions. I will continue to press for answers. And I will continue to listen and to represent our shared values in Washington. And we have many shared progressive values. Earlier this summer, we celebrated Wisconsin's 165th birthday. And throughout our history, progressives have fought for the same values that bring us together this weekend. Values defined by an understanding that the people of Wisconsin take pride in hard work, and believe that we thank you. So now I will add that not only have I heard your voices and listened to your concerns, I've seen you visibly express this opinion. In three-part harmony. Earlier this summer, we celebrated Wisconsin's 165th birthday. And throughout our history, progressives have fought for the same progressive values that bring us together this weekend. Values defined by understanding that the people of Wisconsin take pride in hard work and believe that hard work should be rewarded.
quick if you'd
like. If you'd like to.
I'm just going to spend about 20 seconds here saying this. I am a Tammy Baldwin Democrat, and I know that she's going to do the best job in Washington that could possibly happen. I am so proud that she's our senator. I am supporting Tammy Baldwin, and I know she's going to do the right thing on Syria.
We understand that the people of Wisconsin hold a deep commitment to community, neighbor helping neighbor. We believe that we're in it together. These are the ideals that we give voice to every day, and this weekend, let's renew our commitment to giving them a voice. I have the honor of occupying the same Senate seat, and in fact, the very same desk in the Senate chamber as Robert M. La Follette, Sr. And as we all know, Fighting Bob La Follette ran for this office because he was concerned that while powerful corporate interests were being well served in Washington, ordinary people weren't even being heard. He traveled all around Wisconsin, literally speaking from a stage of soapboxes or hay wagons at county fairs, and his message came to define our state's progressive tradition. The things he talked about still ring true today. As I've traveled the state, Wisconsinites have told me that the powerful and well-connected still seem to get to write their own rules, while the concerns and struggles of middle-class families go unnoticed in Washington. Hardworking families feel like our economic system is tilted towards those at the top, that our political system exists to protect those unfair advantages instead of trying to make sure that everybody gets a fair shot. They see Washington as happy to let Wall Street write its own rules, but unable to help college students pull themselves out of debt. They see Washington working to protect big tax breaks for powerful corporations, but unwilling to invest in building the middle class from the bottom up and from the middle out. They see Washington bouncing from one manufactured political crisis and fiscal crisis to the next, but never addressing the real and ongoing crisis of our disappearing middle class. The truth is, while you hear a lot about the wide distance between Democrats and Republicans, the widest and most important distance in our political system is between the content of the debate in Washington and the concerns of working families in places like Baraboo and Beloit and Butternut. That distance parallels the large and growing gaps between rich and poor, between rising costs and stagnant incomes, between our nation and our competitors when it comes to education and innovation, and it's really hurting people. When my grandparents were raising me, they taught me that if you work hard and play by the rules, you can get ahead. The Wisconsinites I talked to grew up learning the same thing. They're working as hard as ever, and they deserve to get ahead. But many are barely getting by. People are still working for that middle-class dream, a good job that pays the bills, health care coverage you can rely on, a home you can call your own, a chance to save for your kids' college education, and a secure retirement. But instead, too many are finding that even two jobs aren't enough to make ends meet, and those jobs are hard to find and hard to keep. They're finding that the home they work so hard to own isn't even worth what's left on the mortgage. They're finding that the cost of college is going up, and they're worried that they might never be able to retire comfortably. That's the biggest gap of all, the gap between economic security that Wisconsinites work so hard for and the economic uncertainty that they're asked to settle for. And if we can't close that gap, We might someday talk about the middle class as something we used to have, not something that each generation can aspire to. But when they look across that yawning divide to Washington, they see Republicans playing politics. They see Washington Republicans standing by the same old failed ideas, pushing the same old rejected agenda, relying on the same old obstructionist tactics. They see Washington Republicans obstructing progress on immigration reform and refusing to pass a farm bill and refusing to even go to conference on a budget. They see Washington Republicans vote for the 40th time to repeal the Affordable Care Act and openly rooting for failure instead of working together to make reform work for the American people. They see Washington Republicans threatening to shut down the government unless we strip health care coverage away from millions of Americans who need it. They see Washington Republicans insisting on a Paul Ryan budget that refuses to ask millionaires to do their fair share and ends the guarantee of Medicare as we know it, and that locks in sequestration and makes devastating cuts that will gut investments in economic development, innovation, and education. Now, if this agenda sounds familiar to you, you're not crazy. We did, in fact, just have a whole election about these issues, an election that was supposed to be the definitive referendum to decide our path forward. So we laid out our plans, and they laid out their plans, and then Americans voted. And as you'll recall, the people of Wisconsin rejected Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan and Tommy Thompson. But apparently, those Washington Republicans just don't get it. Now, in the wake of their loss last November, Reince Priebus, the RNC chair, decided to conduct an autopsy, an analysis of why they lost the presidency and lost seats in the House and Senate. But even after Reince shared the results of the autopsy with his party faithful, they still don't get it. So here's my analysis. We won. Get over it. And get to work with us to strengthen and grow our middle class. We won. We won because we value fairness. We won because we value hard work and respect labor. We won because we value the promises we make to veterans, to seniors, and to teachers, schools, and students working to build a better future for our state. We won because we advanced the same Wisconsin values that have defined our progressive tradition in this state for well over a century. So it's no wonder they lost the last election. And now, here in Wisconsin, we have a governor more interested in putting his own politics ahead of progress for our great state. A governor who cares more about embracing the Tea Party caucus in Iowa than he does moving our economy forward for the hardworking families of our state. You know, maybe if these guys spent more time learning about the history of our state instead of spending time tearing down the teachers who teach it, you know, maybe they would understand what we all know. Wisconsin is the place where generations of people have worked hard to get ahead. And in the Wisconsin we know, we believe that if you're going to prosper, we're going to do it together. Everyone has to do their fair share, and everyone has to get a fair shot. Everyone deserves a level playing field. Those are the values that I learned growing up in Wisconsin. They're probably no different from the values that you learned growing up here, too. Now, earlier I mentioned that I have the honor of sitting in the very desk that Fighting Bob La Follette once sat in a century ago. I didn't even know you could ask for a specific desk, but, you know, senators kind of like school children, they sign their desks or, you know, whittle their name into their desk. And so there's a long history of who's occupied each desk. And I was so pleased to get his desk so that I could be inspired every time I sat on the floor and worked. I opened that desk and saw some of the other people who had once sat in the desk. And guess what? Gaylord Nelson also sat in that desk. Now, I mention that because despite the fact that a half century separated their service, there are common themes that guided how they worked, and that is being guided by the voice of the people. I already talked about fighting Bob La Follette, fighting the monopolies of his time to give people of this state a true voice. Gaylord Nelson wanted to see our landscape and our waters and our soils and our air protected. And he talked to his fellow senators and could hardly get them to notice. And then with others, he conceived of the idea of Earth Day, a global teach-in and opportunity to take direct action to improve the environment. And in that first Earth Day, those many years ago, millions of Americans and millions around the globe, in fact, participated and did things in their communities to protect our environment. And when Gaylord Nelson returned to the Senate after that first Earth Day, he kind of got the attention of his fellow senators in a way that he hadn't before. And in fairly short order, important protections began to pass for our environment. The power of engaging the people is something that Bob La Follette and Gaylord Nelson knew well. You are here today, and you do the work you do because you want to build a stronger future for yourselves, your families, your communities, this country, and our globe. And now is our chance to do just that. Now you get to decide if the next generation grows up in a Wisconsin that moves these progressive values forward. Now you get to decide whether we live in a state that lives up to our motto, forward. You get to decide whether 2014 will be like 2010, another midterm election where people stay home and progressives don't show up, or whether we'll prove that we are still willing to fight for our values. And you get to decide, yes, you get to decide whether we protect the gains we have made in passing health care reform or whether special interests repeal it. And you get to decide whether women have the freedom to make their own health care decisions or whether politicians are able to put themselves between women and their doctors. Your engagement means that you get to decide what our future looks like and whether it is defined by progress or not. And in the end, you get to decide whether America and Wisconsin will be governed by corporate special interests that already have too much power in Washington and Madison, or whether we build our future on the values of our middle class, hard work, fair play, caring for our neighbors, and investing in our communities. It's a big job. It's a big job. But I've seen how you've fought for me, and I've seen how powerful we can be together. Together we write that next chapter of Wisconsin's proud and progressive tradition. I thank you for your everlasting involvement and energy and encouragement. Forward. All right.
Wow. How wonderful is it to have Tammy Baldwin representing us in the United States Senate? When I listened to Tammy talk about the differences between the Republicans and the Democrats, I remember that story that Mo Udall loved to tell about Teddy Roosevelt, who was giving a speech in the town square, and a person up in front kept yelling, "I'm a Democrat, I'm a Democrat." And Teddy Roosevelt said, "Be quiet. You get your chance. You don't have to interrupt my speech." And the guy yelled, "I'm a Democrat. I'm a Democrat." And finally, T.R., getting tired of that, said, "Okay, why are you a Democrat?" He said, "Well, my granddaddy was a Democrat, my daddy was a Democrat, and I'm a Democrat." And he said, "Well," Teddy said to him, "well, if your grandfather had been a jackass and your father had been a jackass, what would that make you?" And he said, "A Republican." There is a difference. Let me bring Matt Rothschild back to the microphone to introduce Mike Wiggins.
Hear her quote, Fighting Bob's famous, really terrific 1917 anti-war speech, one of the greatest anti-war speeches ever delivered in the U.S. Senate. And the only conclusion I can draw from that our senator will vote her conscience and our will on this important issue. I've got just a little business note here. The Wisconsin Grassroots Network is having a raffle today at their table in the hallway. The drawing will be at 3:30. They're selling tickets for a glass-encased red 14 signature T-shirt with all the 14 senators who left the state when times were at their hardest. So that's their raffle. It's now a great privilege for me to introduce a very important activist and leader in our state, Mike Wiggins, Jr. Mike Wiggins, Jr. is the Bad River Tribal Chairman of the Lake Superior Chippewa Indians. He and the Bad River Tribe and a lot of Wisconsin citizens, environmentalists, activists, are fighting against that out-of-state mining company that Scott Walker likes so much. The same out-of-state mining company that actually wrote the legislation word for word that is allowing them to operate up there, and they're writing another piece of legislation to ram through so that they can kick Wisconsin citizens off of our public lands up there. We need to stand in solidarity with everyone in Wisconsin who's fighting this mine. No one's fighting it harder than Mike Wiggins, Jr.
Well, thank you, everybody. It's a pleasure and an honor to be here today. One of the things that I've said over and over is that Wisconsin has a progressive mentality. Wisconsin has a history that was built on thought and intellect and foresight and really thinking about things that matter. And it's kind of been a very, very difficult ride the last couple of years, as many of you are well aware. So if I came here today and I said, please don't explode and bomb them, most of you would probably think I was obviously referring to Syria. And I'm going to come here today and start by saying, please don't explode and bomb them. And what I'm talking about are the headwaters of the Bad River watershed up in Ashland County. And I'll say this, when we had finished a particularly grueling testimony on a new Wisconsin mining law that is unjust and scientifically dishonest, we had just completed giving 3 minutes of essentially heartfelt discussion about why we need these headwaters intact for our people and everything else. And when we got done, an elder of mine came up to me, Marvin Defoe, and he said, something's going on here. He says, I looked into the eyes of those Republican legislators, and there's something missing, Mike. He said, something missing. And he pointed out a couple, and he said, those ones, he says, we can continue to talk to. And then he mentioned a couple of others, and he said, those ones, he says, I don't think we'd have to worry about talking to them no more. There's nothing there. He goes, but for the ones that we have to talk to, he says, we need to talk to them about babies. He says, we need to talk to them about future generations and about children and about life and about water. He told me, he says, you know, he says, when babies arrive, he says, they're carried in that global water, and that water rushing at birth, before birth, announces their arrival into this world. He says, and any parent that has ever been there And for all the moms that are around, he says, as soon as that baby takes that first breath out of that globe of water, that, he goes, it's just instant love. He says, and that right there is exactly what we need to talk to these Republican legislators about. He says, no matter what, he says, for all that other stuff that's out there, he says, focus on that. And I tried. And I'll tell you, it's been an interesting journey watching Republican legislators represent mining companies rather than people. Watching money buy essentially law that flies in the face of the natural world by naming something iron mining and pretending that sulfides don't exist, sulfides being those rocks that create sulfuric acid upon exposure to air and water, we fool ourselves, because it's law now, into believing that there's going to be no having to deal with sulfuric acid. And those kinds of things have been incredibly difficult to watch. Now it's gotten so bad that for some of the legislators that pushed this new mining law that is unjust and that is set to really destroy the true platform of future economic development up in the Northwoods, those pristine ecosystems up there, watching these legislators flee the legislature because they've done their corporate bidding. I've watched Honardell and Souter, and Souter actually got some type of water safety compliance, something or other, which is absolutely alarming. When these guys pushed that mining law down the throats of their own citizens. And that was one of the most interesting and most heartening and most beautiful things about fighting a good fight and trying to talk about why those northern counties are poised for the future right now in real time, was watching people bring their babies and let them play on blankets while mom and dad testified to the Republican legislators and to those committees, watching people celebrate growing and gardening and sustainable development and local economies, and those types of discussions break out as they're begging for the protection and the conservation of ecosystems up there. And watching guys like Scott Griffiths, the mayor of Washburn, put together and work diligently on a sustainable development matrix for the local economies up there. Watching Bill Whalen, Ashland mayor, and Larry McDonald, the Bayfield mayor up there around the lake, join Scott Griffiths, myself, and Rose Gurnow from the Red Cliff Band of Lake Superior Chippewa, and reject mining as some type of manna from heaven. As GTAC readies to explode the headwaters of our watershed, and we think about sulfuric acid, and we think about sulfate pollution that destroys wild rice crops, and we think about asbestosis, because there's been asbestos discovered in those hills by the DNR, and I don't think many of you probably have heard that too much yet, right? That might go hand in hand with the fact that GTAC doesn't want Bad River's wetland delineators and scientists crawling around the Pinokies, gathering information about the hydrology and the waterways and the systems up there. It might be why Tom Tiffany and Senator Glenn Grothman, Senator Glenn trusts the mining company Grothman, that's what he told the local family up north, are working so hard to shut down what is essentially special tax status lands that are publicly accessible. That might be why they're working so hard to shut all of that down, because the more we look and the more we discover about these unbelievably pristine places, the more we understand the fragility and the beauty and the wonder of what they present for those local communities up there. Discovering that stuff is essentially a foundation for truly evaluating and vetting out a mining application. And I don't think the mining company really wants that. And to be honest with you, at this point in time, I'm not really sure the powers that run the DNR really want that vetting. And it's alarming to me. And so what I'm saying is essentially it's been very difficult to watch mining companies hold sway in this state. It's been very difficult to watch who I feel should be our partners cater and kowtow to mining companies and billionaires at the expense of the local voices that are truly crying for their life and their livelihoods. I'll say this. When you look at your Constitution And I talk with all kinds of non-tribal people that love their home up there in Ashland County and Iron County, Bayfield County, and around the lake. And they keep telling me, well, there's nothing we can do. It's up to you and the tribes now. And I keep thinking to myself, I wish you guys had a treaty with your government. You know? I really do. But here's the thing about those treaties. Here's the things about those treaties, and it's the very same thing for all of you with the Constitution. You don't see negotiations in the Constitution for clean air and clean water. What you see is essentially that notion of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. You get into our treaties, and you don't see negotiations for air and water. You see the privileges that come with occupying and the granting of usufructuary rights, hunting, fishing, and harvesting. And I guess what I'm saying is you don't see those negotiations for clean air and clean water because obviously they were so self-evident, so unbelievably simplistic and basic to leave as a platform, that to discuss those types of things meant that we were getting away from the very foundation that everything else around us is built on. We get away from that whole notion that water is life. And to get away from clean air and clean water and to start negotiating and acquiescing ourselves into contamination, we start talking about things more like sickness and death. We start talking about things that really don't matter in terms of the sustainability and the survival of a country, whether that be your country or whether that be my little country. And when you think about that, there's a couple of ways to look at that. We can take these right here, and we can call this 500 years or even 1,000 years, and we can put those on. And over the top of these, this set of lenses that says 500 years or 1,000 years, let's grab this other pair of glasses that says climate change or climate change adaptation, and let's put those on. And now I'm looking at 500 years, and I'm looking at climate change adaptation, and let's look at drought and water scarcity and bombing other countries and all those other things that don't seem to fit with the notions of the web of life, and let's put those on. You put those types of lenses on, and you start looking at things through all those different prisms and colors, and you see the rainbow break out. It ain't just light. All of a sudden, there's a rainbow, and you can start seeing things a little more clearly. And you start understanding that maybe 10 to 15 years of jobs for a mining company and more profit for a billionaire doesn't make that much sense when there's all these people in a local region clamoring around sustainable development, local economies. Maybe we could put some help their way instead of rolling over for a billionaire. And I think I'll sum my comments up by saying water is life, and that's what we're dealing with up north. It's a very gentle, a very beautiful resistance. It's just essentially saying leave our headwaters intact. GTAC, Mr. Chris Klein, Mr. Scott Walker, please take your armed militia and your machine guns and put them away. And put away... And put away the umpteen tons of ammonium nitrate explosives that you have slated for this place. And get down to the business of truly helping these communities. It ain't about catering to a billionaire. It's about truly putting some thought, some progressive intellect and thought and foresight into what these communities are going to need. And that's not a warlike cry. It's a gentle, beautiful request. So, raise your hand if you're from Madison. There's a lot of people. I love Madison. I was farming at the farmer's market this morning, and it was awesome. What a gift that is. I'll say this, and then I'll be done. Water is life. And that's what we're fighting for up north. And we have our own issues with basic sanitation issues and infrastructure good Lord, we're getting blown up by media trackers and other Koch-funded right-wing organizations for that stuff, and we're fixing it. That's no justification to do what they want to do in the form of that mine and all that destruction. But water is life. For all of you who raised your hand and said you're from Madison, guess what? As on a molecular level, as a physical manifestation of being human today, as we sit here and look at each other, we are DNA and atoms and all that stuff. We might even say we're the result of random stardust with a little bit of the hand of the Creator, right? And you're also sitting here looking back at me, manifestations that are over 70% water. And here's what I'll say about that. You may be random stardust, all of you. Maybe random stardust, the result of random stardust coming together in this thing called life. But you're hardly random water. As you sit here as physical manifestations of 70% plus water, you're not Pinocchio Mountain and Bad River groundwater aquifer water. You're water from Madison here. All of you, as physical entities, the H2O, the water that's coursing through, our ancestors tell us this. Water is life. It comprises us. It's in our brain. It causes the blood to pump through our heart. And it even goes so far as to say the brain produces that thought. That thought is actually a character and a carrier of that moisture that comprises you. And that's not random. You're Madison water. We are Pinocchio Mountain as our recharge station and the Bad River groundwater aquifers. We are Bad River groundwater aquifer water sentinels up there. And so when we fight and resist this mine, it's not to be warlike and it's not to step on anyone's notion of job creation. It's merely to just try and survive. And it's merely looking at those babies that are here and those babies that are out there on the way and thinking about them as manifestations of water, just like you guys are. So I want to thank you so much. Thank you so much for letting me share some time with you. And it's an honor to be here. I get to be on a little panel. And I know Pinocchio Pete and Bob Kincaid from West Virginia, who has seen the atrocities of West Virginia mountaintop removal, are here. They want to share information, and I look forward to that, and hopefully we'll see you. So thank you very much.
What a message. All of us should listen to him and get behind him. I want to say something right now before we call Matt back up here to speak to you. This is the 13th or the 12th Fighting Bob Fest. And every year, here's what happens. We pick out people we want to have speak. We figure out what their costs will be in terms of transportation. And we get them to agree to come here. And we've always broken even. And the only reason we break even is because people who come to Fighting Bob Fest are willing to drop some money into the bucket, and so we're going to ask that the buckets be passed so that you can have a chance to contribute something to this wonderful cause, because we need to have the money in order to continue to bring in speakers that really inspire us and make us real. So if the bucket passes, we'll be passing the buckets, but first I'll introduce you, if you bring Matt back to the microphone for a very special moment.
Thanks, Ed. And the Progressive is delighted to be co-sponsoring Fighting Bob Fest this year, and we want to be more and more involved in the years ahead, and we hope you'll contribute to those buckets so we can cover this year's costs and prepare for next year. I do want to urge you to go to the breakout sessions, and this one that Mike Wiggins is going to be on is going to be terrific. Rebecca Kemble is going to be on that panel with him. I see Rebecca over there. Rebecca's done incredible reporting from up north and also from our capital. I think she's the single best state reporter in Wisconsin right now, and we're grateful she's there on the stage. Panels will be great at the breakout sessions. It's now a tremendous honor for me to formally introduce to you Ruth Conniff, who has been with the Progressive now for 22 years, not counting the time she started as an intern. She was associate editor, she was Washington editor, she's been political editor for a long, long time, and as of this week, she's the editor of the Progressive magazine. She's taken over for me, and I couldn't be happier. She has tremendous energy, ideas, intelligence for moving the progressive forward. And she will be doing so with tremendous skill. You may have seen her on Ed Schultz's show on MSNBC or heard her on the Ed Schultz radio show or seen her on PBS's To the Contrary or heard her on the Joy Cardine show. She is a real star, and she will be shining for the progressive for many years to come. She is, as I like to say, the long-lost great-granddaughter of Belle Case La Follette. The Progressive has never, if you can believe it, in its 104 years, had a woman to be the editor of the Progressive magazine. Belle Case La Follette herself could have edited the Progressive, and actually, if truth be told, was editing the Progressive for many years, with Fighting Bob. And when Fighting Bob died in 1925, she got together young Bob and Phil to decide whether they were going to shut down the Progressive or not. And it was really her more than anybody, I imagine, who kept the magazine going then for the next many years before they handed it over to Bill Evue. And so Belle Case La Follette was actually acting editor of the Progressive magazine, but not formally. And so it's long past time, and Ruth Conniff is going to take us from here. I'm going to still be with the Progressive every day. I'm not going away. I'm going to be senior editor, and I'm just going to be a crotchety old copy editor, which suits me fine. And Ruth is going to take us forward deep into the digital age, and also in every other way, leading the Progressive forward. She reveres our tradition. She reveres our writers. She put together an incredible book about Seneca Falls, Stonewall, and Selma earlier this year. And just this week, in her first week on the job as editor of the Progressive, she launched publicschoolshakedown.org, a tremendous effort to defend our public schools from the privatizers and the vultures of voucherization. So I give you Ruth Conniff.
Thanks, Matt. Matt's the world's greatest boss. I said it last night at the Barrymore, and I'll say it again. His humane values are what make the Progressive a great place to work, and they inform our magazine, not just in rhetoric, but because Matt is a great guy and because he believes in treating people well. And that really shines through, I think, in everything that we do. So I feel very fortunate to have worked with him for all of these years. Also, I just want to say, let's hear it for Ed Garvey, who's carried the torch. He's carried the torch for Wisconsin's progressive tradition all these years, bringing these progressive speakers and organizers here to our community to stir up everybody and keep us fighting, and it's an incredible service, and it gives us a platform that I'm really proud the Progressive magazine is part of now, and we're going to carry this tradition forward, and it makes a lot of sense. It was Matt and Ed who decided that the Progressive magazine is a natural home for Fighting Bob Fest. Our founder is Fighting Bob La Follette, and our shared values have very deep roots in this state, and it's really fun to think about combining energies and taking this progressive movement into the future. It's what Bob La Follette called the fight for the public interest against private greed that we stand for fundamentally. And boy, do we have private greed in spades right now here in the state of Wisconsin as a laboratory really for the takeover of our democracy by the right wing and corporate interests nationally. So I don't have to tell you how bad Scott Walker, or as the right wing blogger nicknamed him, Governor Awesome Sauce, has been. He's moving on to the national stage, and he's taking his whole theory of liquidating civil society onto the national stage. But fortunately, we also have this progressive tradition, this progressive movement here in Wisconsin, to carry us forward. And as I started full-time back at the Progressive and thinking about taking on this job as editor, as Matt mentioned, one of our first projects was this ebook series from our archives. We have these huge bound volumes in our office at 409 East Main Street from when the Progressive was a broadsheet. It started as La Follette's Weekly, and then even as the Progressive magazine initially was a great, big, broad tabloid-style paper. And we still have those crumbling, yellowing copies in our office. And so paging through them to create this ebook of our history was really an amazing experience. Belle Case La Follette was a huge fighter for women's suffrage, and for a long time the Progressive magazine was fundamentally a magazine to advocate for and fight for women's suffrage in this country. It really gives you a sense that we are on solid ground historically to look at what the progressive has stood for over these many years. The fight for the vote for women, in which the arguments are so similar to the arguments that we hear today. In fact, I was on a pundit show where with a conservative woman from the Heritage Foundation who was talking about how it doesn't matter to her whether we have 20% or 50% representation in Congress. That's not really the issue. And I was just sort of struck by having just read these very arguments in this battle for women's right to vote. So, you know, this stuff has not gone away. But the progressive has been on the right side, and we in Wisconsin, progressive movement, have been on the right side. The civil rights movement, the Progressive magazine early on published James Baldwin, published Martin Luther King Jr., talking about the fight for civil rights in this country. And that's a really proud tradition. And, of course, right here at home was an early opponent of Senator Joe McCarthy and the House Un-American Activities Committee. And that is such a proud tradition, and one that those arguments still resonate today.